primarily. There are eight primary emotions.
Okay.
You know, that are acknowledged, you know, and granted.
Do I get to guess these?
Sure, if you want to guess them, go for it. Ready? Yeah. All right. Yeah. Go for it.
Sadness.
Yep.
Yes.
Nice. Ding, 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 ding. That's one.
That's what. I'm one for one. Happiness.
Joy? Yeah, joy.
Okay.
Yep.
Fear?
Yep.
Anger?
Yep. Nice job. You're doing well.
Phew. What am I, 4 for 4? All right.
Yes,
all right.
4 for 4.
Anxious?
Worry? You're going to have a little bit of,
We'll call that a miss.
Welcome to How I See It with me, Mark Pratt, and
Justin Sternberg. This is a podcast that works to counter cultural polarization through thoughtful conversations.
Morning, sir.
Good morning, Mark.
How are you, Justin?
I'm well. How are you?
I am also well.
It's been a couple weeks.
Yeah, it's been a little while.
Yeah.
Just stuff going on with us individually, but it's good to be back here.
It is. And our audience won't see any dips.
That's
the beauty of being a little bit ahead.
Exactly.
However, we're not a little bit. Well, that's, now we're just a teeny bit ahead.
We're sufficiently ahead.
Sufficiently, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's good to be back at it, back in the studio.
Yes. Congratulations, by the way.
On what?
On 1,000 listens.
Oh, yes. Yes. We crossed over the threshold. 1,000 people have hit play and listened for whatever Anchor deems a sufficient amount of time to call it a play.
Oh, okay. So, is that how that works?
Yeah, I don't know. I think if I remember hearing at one point, it's like 15 seconds.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So it's like someone gives you 15 seconds, they consider it. They listen to your podcast.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Which, you know, if they caught the right part, it might be fair, but.
Yeah. But that's not necessarily. Yeah. You could kind of have to listen 15 seconds just to get a gist of what's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know that for a fact with Anchor, but I know like some video play metrics, they base it on a pretty small chunk of time. My guess with Anchor, I tease a little bit. My guess would be it's more than 15 seconds. My guess would be several minutes, but I do think they probably aren't counting the full play.
Sure.
This is a bunch of, talking baseball, is that what that phrase is?
Talking baseball?
You don't know that phrase? Yeah. It's like inside baseball. Speculation. Inside baseball.
Oh, okay.
Inside baseball.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Behind the scenes nonsense that nobody cares about.
Exactly. But that's what baseball. That was what I was congratulating you for, though, by the way. Nice job.
For the inside baseball. For the 1,000 plus plays, yes.
So, yes, thank you.
We did it.
Thank you. Thank you, our listeners. Yes, exactly. And,
there's been a few people in the last couple of weeks that said, hey, I just listened to your podcast. And I was like, how was it? Well, I haven't got that far yet. But, hey, they started. They started listening, which is exciting. I've heard several people come up, you know, they've come up to me and said they've started listening, so that's exciting.
No doubt.
I guess it's good we keep doing this, huh?
It's good as far as I'm concerned, yes.
Let's get 1,000 more plays, huh?
Exactly.
And then, we'll see after that. Maybe we'll get 500 after.
Oh, wow.
I don't know. All right, we're rambling, Mark.
But it's okay. So go ahead.
Today... Is that what you're going to talk about?
Sure.
Yeah. Today, we're going to talk a little bit about the concept of thinking versus feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to set it up a little bit.
Go right ahead.
Because for a while, Mark and I were meeting together as a result of our involvement with Celebrate Recovery. I can say that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so we were purposely trying to discuss certain things about the 12 steps as we worked through them together. And one thing that I would often say, it was kind of a catchphrase for me, is, well, I think, or no.
No.
I feel like this is how this is. Or I feel like that when this happens, this is why I did that. I feel like Mark would call me out on that. He'd say, well, do you feel that or do you think that? And I know the first time, or maybe first several times, I'm like, I don't really know what you're getting at, Mark.
Yeah.
it was a little bit lost on me. But you continued to hone in on that and work on that. And, you know, we chatted about it, essentially, to describe, like, here's why that matters, right?
Yeah.
And so I think I would love to share that same conversation with our listeners and kind of break it down even further. And I know you have some awesome insight into that. So with that, I would love to hand it over to you
first. And I think that's where I come from as a therapist. It's like when I hear someone say, feel like, my automatic thought is to say, okay, is that a thought or is that an emotion?
Mm-hmm.
And typically, okay, because we're hearing feel and we're hearing like all at the same time, it's like, I just use like myself. But I want to recognize whenever we have to put like after feel, we are typically thinking. Okay? And I think it's a cultural thing. Because my thought is that we want to recognize that it's just a feeling and there's nothing I can do about it. Because it becomes a little more nebulous. It's a little less mean, or it's a little less something in my mind that I don't have to necessarily acknowledge the fact that this is really what I'm thinking.
I was going to add a comment there.
Go ahead.
And I was unintentionally going to say, I feel like when I do that.
Uh-huh. What are you trying to do?
I think when I do that, I'm trying to take the edge off of it, right? It's like this idea of like, it's not as harsh of a thing as an actual thought.
Exactly.
Right? It's this intuitive thing, right? But yeah, I think kind of what you were getting at with me specifically in our conversations was that maybe it was a cop-out.
I think sometimes it's a cop out, and I think as a culture, sometimes we want to recognize how feelings, there isn't anything you can do about them. So if I just feel like this, there really isn't anything I can do, because our feelings do come and go. It's not as if there's some great thing we can do about our emotions. Okay. And statistically speaking, you know, the average emotion lasts between 90 and 120 seconds. So granted, now some emotions last longer. Sadness can last for days. So when I factor that in, you know, and the average is still 90 to 120, I can feel a lot of emotions in a short amount of time. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So, and I think for me, the reason I like to delineate that difference between what I'm thinking and what I'm feeling is when I'm recognizing, okay, emotions may come and emotions may go, kind of like a boat on the water. You see that speck down at the horizon, it gets closer. I can identify the boat. I know in the case of emotions, I know maybe what that emotion is, or at least I'm recognizing I'm feeling something. And yet that, just like the boat, it will become a speck on the other horizon shortly. So it will come and it will go. That's primarily what our emotions do. Speaking of primarily, there are 8 primary emotions.
Okay.
You know, that are acknowledged, you know, and granted.
Do I get to guess these?
Sure, if you want to guess them,
go
for it.
Ready?
Yeah. All
right.
Yeah. Go for it.
Sadness.
Yep.
Yes.
Nice. Ding, 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 ding. That's one.
That's right. I'm one for one. Happiness.
Joy? Yeah, joy.
Okay.
Yep.
Fear?
Yep.
Anger?
Yep. Nice job. You're doing well.
Phew. What am I, 4 for 4? All right.
Yes,
all
4 right. for 4.
anxious?
Worry? You're gonna have a little bit of
That a miss.
Yeah, kind of, and not. It's okay. There's gonna be surprise can be part of that. Shock, wonder. So, you know, surprise can be if depending on my anxiety.
Surprise is one of them. You just
surprise is one. Dang of them. Yeah.
I don't get
yep.
that one.
Yep.
So I'm 4 for 5.
Yes.
Unless you just said wonder was another one. Because you just listed several words.
Yes. Wonder is part of surprise.
So I'm 4 of 6. Oh, okay. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
Surprise. Yes.
All right. Man.
This is tough to do in a quick format.
Those are all the ones I feel, so no.
Okay.
Wait, let's...
Oh, no, there's probably another one you're feeling.
Confusion?
Doubt?
Doubt?
Not so much.
Yeah, those are more thoughts than emotions.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
This is why we're doing this.
This is exactly why we're doing this. Because I want to recognize there's 8 primary ones, but typically if we talk with an individual, they might be able to come off with 3, 4, 5 off the top of their head. But I want to recognize within these 8, and I'm going to share the other ones, shame, guilt,
shame.
You know, when I make a mistake, okay, disgust, contempt, you know, that feeling of, you know, you disgust me or even, surprise, interest, joy, fear, sadness, and anger. Those are the 8. So in that process, and then there are all, this is another part of the emotions. Sometimes those are primary emotions and there's also secondary emotions. So when I feel shame, okay, a secondary emotion that might go along with that is when I feel shame, I feel angry.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Or when I feel, you know, disgust, I might feel anger as well. Or when I feel angry, when I feel fearful, I might have a certain level of anger that goes along with that because I can remember a time when I was scared. Mm-hmm. You follow me? Yeah. And that's where our emotions can kind of get layered, if you will, kind of like the onion.
Yeah.
So it's important to be able to recognize what are emotions and yet being able to untangle my thoughts from those emotions. So when I'm feeling fearful, okay, what have I learned to do? You follow me?
Yeah.
And that's where our thinking and our feeling can get confusing because we can learn, we develop thoughts based on how we are feeling. So I don't want to feel scared. So what do? So I might become angry as a part of that defensiveness so that you don't get close enough to me to hurt me anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You follow me?
Yeah.
And I realize we've talked about emotions primarily, and I want to recognize the reason I like to delineate that difference is the emotions will come and the emotions will go. But I think we learn many of our emotions within our family systems. You know, it's that our families are our, you know, our initial social interaction. So, and yet I bring what I learned within that family system into a lot of my social interactions outside of that family because that's where I learned them. So now my thoughts become important and I don't even always necessarily realize it. But when I recognize, when I'm hearing myself say, feel like, At that point, it can be a little red flag that goes off in my mind. And I'm able to say, okay, what am I thinking? Because if I'm able to acknowledge what I'm thinking, okay, give me an example for your feel like.
I feel like when this person does that, they're saying this about me. You know,
okay.
Like that's an example. I feel like when you know, this person doesn't respect what I say, or whatever, doesn't do what I suggest in the meeting,
sure,
that they are disrespecting me or whatever, right? Like, that's an example.
Sure. Maybe. So I'm thinking that that person may not respect me. Or even I'm thinking that that person is outright disrespecting me in front of this group.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is that 100% accurate? I may not necessarily know that, but at the same time, I think when we acknowledge it as a thought, we're better prepared to address it,
mm-hmm,
in such a way that says, okay, this is really what I'm thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and the reason I say that is whenever we acknowledge our thoughts to a certain degree, we are better able to take control of them.
Yeah, so
in such a way that says, okay, I'm responsible for what I'm thinking, and there's something I can do about this.
Because
mm-hmm, sometimes that's where the tough part comes into play. It's like, if I'm not necessarily addressing what I'm thinking, I'll continue to feel like in such a way takes ownership.
Yeah. You just make me think of the Stephen Covey's push for proactivity versus reactivity, and essentially feeling like is a reactive thing, right? It's literally reacting to your emotions, I feel like.
Sure.
Therefore, I'm reacting to that or whatever. Where proactivity is saying, I may feel that, but what do I think? It's this conversion of the reactive response, yes, into a proactive, whatever that is, right? Like, that's,
sure,
it seems like that's always been your goal with me anyway, is to say, okay, but, you know, to your point, like, we can be pushed and pulled by our emotions all day, yes, long, and that will happen if we allow it. But that is the reactive approach. It's literally reacting to every whim of every emotion that comes across, and then we're like, yeah, the ship at sea that's just tossed back and forth,
sure,
by the waves. We're thinking is this idea of like, turn on the rudder, turn on the motor, and
yeah,
start going against those waves, right? Like,
exactly,
figure out where you're going with this, and those emotions will come and go, and it's okay to recognize them and address them and work through them. But to have a, you know, to recognize that they don't define you, they don't push you, they don't pull you,
yes,
unless you let them.
And it, and it, and from my perspective, in a lot of cases, that is what emotions, I'll say, are designed to do, is to create a response. Now, there would be those who might say, you know, okay, this is a primal aspect of, you know, evolution, you know, to the point of saying, you know, it was designed to protect us, you know, in the whole caveman perspective, as emotions were developed. I recognize from my perspective that, you know, I believe emotions are part of a God-given design,
yeah,
that we have. And I think that's when we can break this down to, you know, 8 primary emotions. But I think part of our emotional vocabulary is the ability to recognize that each of those 8 can be very nuanced. And I think it's important for us to be able to, you know, communicate that, especially in our social interactions, because there's definitely a difference between feeling fear, feeling abandoned, or feeling anger versus contempt. You follow me?
Mm-hmm.
So I think when we're able to communicate and we are able to grow our emotional vocabulary, we're far better off in our ability to communicate with one another. Because, you know, when I feel abandoned, okay, that's just a feeling that says, okay, I was here and I felt like I felt alone, because in this moment we were together side by side and you chose to do something else. You follow me? And after that, I did feel alone, but I really felt abandoned in that process. You follow me? And that can, when we talk, when we're able to talk like that, we're better able to have empathy in such a way that says, oh, okay, yeah, I was there with you, and I realized that I left to go take care of something, a phone call, and I can recognize that that's what happened. It wasn't necessarily my intent, but when we're able to identify emotions and keep them at that level, we're far better off, or we're far more able to avoid defensiveness. Because I'm just recognizing that you had a feeling, and that feeling's okay.
Yeah.
But when your feelings and thoughts come at me and say, you should have known. Okay, now we're starting to talk about what I think you're thinking you should know. You follow me? And it's not accurate to be able to say, you should have known.
Yeah.
Okay? And that's the part that we can challenge. No, Justin just didn't know that I was going to feel that when he left. Does that make sense?
It does. I'd love to poke some holes.
Go for it.
Is there room for saying I feel like, especially for you as a counselor, you know, listening to someone who's working through some stuff, like as an introductory, like, start, right? As a, as the beginning, is there room for that?
Sure. There's room for that. And I'll even walk through that in.
Here's why I ask.
Go ahead.
In your example, it's important to examine your feelings, right? Like in other words, those emotions will just push us and pull us, and we won't recognize it. Recognizing it, I think, is step one in prevention, right? Of dealing with those emotions affecting you in every whim, right? Like, I think recognizing that, oh, these emotions are coming, right? So I feel like is an important first part of recognizing, to say, when that person goes away, in your example, I feel like they abandoned me, or I feel, or I just feel alone or abandoned or whatever that is, you know?
Yeah.
Is that, does that make sense? Is that?
So that makes sense. And for every time you're using feel like, I can also submit that I'm thinking I was abandoned. You follow me?
But sometimes it's not even an actual, I know what you're saying, but it's not a conscious thought. It's a subconscious leaning towards abandonment.
Yeah.
I don't actually think in my mind, oh, that person abandoned me. But I'm just like you said, the primary emotion is just anger, and I'm not sure why, and I just know they left, and I'm just upset. But I didn't actually think that I was abandoned. That's how I, you know what I mean?
And it, here would be, this is my thought in that process.
Poke holes in my hole poking.
What are we left with then?
A lot of holes. We'll repair them at the end.
But this is where I come from. It's okay to be able to say, I'm not exactly sure what I'm feeling in response to that. I felt alone. I felt abandoned. And I'm not saying it's even your fault. I'm recognizing this is my stuff. And I may not actually even be sure that that's exactly what I'm feeling. But that's how I felt. You follow me? And I'm yes, to answer, I would answer your question, initial question, is it okay to say feel like? Yeah, it's okay. But I think it's important that we're recognizing that as part of a quandary, a wondering, as far as this process of being able to understand there's a lot of feelings, and I don't necessarily always take control, take ownership of them. And some of those, some of those are so primary, and I don't use that word loosely. I'm not trying to say, but I want to recognize, okay, I'm breaking it down here a little bit. I need to recognize that we have two forms of memory, okay? The reason we don't have early childhood memories is due to intrinsic memory. It's in there, we experience something in that attachment theory dynamic, if you will. I may have felt abandoned, or I may have felt excluded, or I felt anxiety, you know, even as a child when my needs weren't necessarily met. So what do I do with that? Okay, I cried and someone didn't show up. Okay, that's intrinsic memory. We don't have words to communicate that. We have that, but once we develop language, we're able to have extrinsic memory. So I can communicate what I saw, what I experienced. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. And there would be a part of me and this ability to untangle and look at patterns and cycles. Some of that difficulty in communicating emotion might have a lot to do with those intrinsic memories.
Right.
When someone didn't meet that need.
Yeah.
In attachment.
Yeah.
Dynamic. So that's where I would come back to when I'm feeling alone, when I'm feeling abandoned. Okay. That may be a little bit difficult to be able to create that understanding. Mm-hmm. When I experience that same thing again.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where, from my perspective, that's where a lot of our patterns and cycles are developed.
Yeah. I think about, you know, even Celebrate Recovery step groups or whatever, and I'm sure you in counseling, but like some of those amazing breakthroughs are when, you know, an intrinsic memory is revealed, right? Like, yes. An intrinsic a pattern developed in that intrinsic memory phase of our life, and someone goes, oh, I get it, I do this every single time because, yes, of that thing.
Yes.
And I've never put words to it. Right.
That's exactly
never,
right,
you know.
And I would say, and I know typically at weddings, we all, you know, weddings will typically use 1 Corinthians 13, you know, on love. But my favorite part for me personally is the part where, you know, Paul says, when I was a child, I spoke like a child, I reasoned like a child. And when I became an adult, I put my childish ways behind me. And I would, I would dare say from my perspective that we don't always put all of our childish ways behind us.
Because, to your point, we don't know that's what it is.
Exactly.
Right? It is inside us, that intrinsic memory. It is part of our pattern that we have not, you know, brought words to, brought whatever.
Exactly.
And so that's such a good analogy and very true. Like, I think of my own breakthroughs.
Sure.
In my, you know, working through stuff, recognizing like, yeah, some of those things were so childish. Right.
Sure.
And like exactly what you're saying. And I, of course, I didn't feel childish at the time, and I would have been offended if you would have, you know, whatever. But looking back on those patterns going, wow, yeah, that was very childish, you know?
Sure.
And I think for me,
that would be where, from my perspective, that would be where feel like comes into play. When I'm really just trying to develop some of that.
Yeah.
And instead, from my perspective, I would just say, you know what? This is what I'm thinking. I'm not 100% sure on this, but I'm thinking this is where that feeling comes from.
Mm-hmm.
You follow me? Here again, it's not me trying to reiterate my point, but it is to that point of creating that wondering that says, okay, maybe it's this. And it's okay for me to start thinking about it that way, in such a way that says, I'm not 100% sure. I don't want to be judgmental.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to be arrogant. But at the same time, let's address this in such a way that says, I'm thinking this is what's going on.
Yeah.
When I feel this, I tend to do that.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting, too, because there is also semantics among people, mm-hmm. right? Like, among individuals, we use certain phrases and words meaning different things, right? And oh, sure. So, for me, when I say I feel like what you just described about, this is what I'm processing through, this is my thoughts on the matter, that was how I conveyed that,
yep.
was I feel like. And I think since our conversations, understanding that was a different meaning for you, and I think the translation got lost, and also arguably isn't the right way to translate some of that, right?
I'm hearing what depending you're saying. On yeah, whatever. I'm not saying it's a wrong way. Yeah. I just want to acknowledge that other side of the equation.
Yeah.
In this process of thinking and feeling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so the other thing I was thinking about too is the process of you first start by recognizing those
mm-hmm.
feelings, right? And so...
Yes.
Discussing them, thinking about them, right? And so one of the put off childish things that I had to do was to do that. Just start there. Like, look at your emotions and recognize what they're doing to you, you know?
Sure.
And take ownership of them, that proactive approach to the reactive, you know? Instead of being reactive to them. And so one of the things I had to do pretty early on in my process of healing and recovery was stop trusting my feelings so darn much.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
And so that was where that vernacular came from for me, was like, I feel like was a way to say, I don't trust this, but here it is.
Yes.
You know? And I think...
this is what I'm thinking about. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was, that was an important like process for me to get to that. And I almost... like took our conversations as a challenge to go from, okay, you've thought about this enough, what are you now thinking about? Like, what's next after that, right? Like,
sure.
You've now recognized these patterns, you've now recognized these emotions that come and go or whatever. Now what? You know, it's kind of the thinking part versus just feel like, okay, but now what? You know, and I think that was my takeaway from some of our conversations. Like, yeah, it's a good point. Now what? You know, like,
sure.
What do I think about this? How do I respond to this? And it's like a process of movement from the first step being recognizing, the next step being, okay, now what? And some of those emotions I've learned, I can just ignore. Like,
right.
When they come, I know what it is. I look at it, go, yep, there you are again. And then we move on with our life. And that's been very valuable to get to that point in a few things. And then there are other things where it's like, I've never thought about now what? And I'm still processing that. Or wrestling is a word we use, right? Like, I don't know. In some cases, it means this. In some cases, it means that. But thinking is pretty important, right? Like,
no doubt.
Determine what those... Yeah, so that's a little bit about... Yeah.
And I will say, and this is part of my... This is why I'm... thankful that we're created, because I think in our culture we can go in one of two extremes. You know, we either become emotions are all that matter, or thoughts are all that matter. And I think, you know, that becomes a comfort level to each individual person, because I'm more comfortable in my emotions because I don't necessarily, they can, I'm okay being that boat tossed on the wave. Yeah. And in some ways my emotions create a sense of connection with other people who are emotionally driven as well.
Yeah.
And yet, you know, our thoughts, you know, can be that same thing. I think about it from the context of how often, if we were to, you know, bring a bunch of couples into the room, you know, I would say 90% of people, if you were to say, how many of you struggle with communication? You know, whenever I work with couples, you know, or even in group settings, it's like, you know, communication's always that, that primary, you know, it's going to get the majority of hands. It's like, we just can't talk.
Mm-hmm.
And I think so often... you know, and I'll bring it back even to the emotional dynamic. Oh, this is Chris and I early on had to redefine our perspectives on certain emotions. Okay? Because sadness to me isn't going to be the same as sadness to you. And Chris used the word silly at times, and that struck me. That was one of those,
you know, when you
intrinsic memories.
It's, yeah, like, it made me think of that story you told me about typing on the keyboard too hard.
Oh,
you,
sure.
Your was it grandpa?
Uncle.
Uncle, you know, yes. Whacking you in the back of the head, like, don't be silly with the keyboard. You
yeah.
Know? So that's what,
yeah,
that's
don't
what
break
my
it.
Mind, yeah, exactly. Yeah, he yeah, was talking about. But yeah, but that farmer background and yep. That everything serious and whatever. Yeah.
Yes. So.
Sorry, I didn't mean it.
It's all good.
I went right to that keyboard moment in my mind. Like,
and that's what we do.
Yeah.
You follow me? Mm-hmm. Because that's the same as this.
Yeah.
So yes, in that aspect, any time where, you know, Chris would use that kind of language, I would become very defensive.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because that wasn't a positive thing. And right. And think about that, even with the terminology we use when I say I felt abandoned.
Yeah.
You follow me? Nobody wants to necessarily directly abandon someone. Right. You know, but yet, if I'm able to recognize that that's a feeling, that feeling is every bit as valid as my feelings, and I want to acknowledge that some things that I do may elicit that feeling on your part.
Yeah. Man, I feel like if there's one thing we could get out of this episode for anyone listening who is struggling with communication, it's that validity of emotions on both sides.
Yes.
And that empathy that says, oh, you're feeling that.
Yes.
I never like when I feel that. So now it explains why you're frustrated at me or whatever the situation is, because you're feeling that. And when I feel that way, I also get frustrated, you know?
Yes.
And vice versa. But like,
that's the basis also, of empathy.
Yes. But also not to wear that as, like you said, that, to be able to put a barrier or a boundary up that says I don't have to be defensive because they feel that way. And I may have caused it. If we could just learn that those things are valid. Yeah.
And I'm thinking as you're describing that, you know, we tend to think of the I statement as rudimentary, as, you know, kindergarten. But I think it's foundational when we're able to recognize this is how I feel. And I'm able to recognize that that's okay. Because if I come at you and I say, you abandoned me.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
That's a thought at that point.
That's an accusation. That's
yes.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
that's
yeah.
going to elicit defensiveness. And
right.
that's what couples do.
Right.
In that process. But
right.
when I'm able to say, I felt abandoned when this happened.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the I statement dynamic that says, okay, this is what I was feeling. And in this relationship, you're gonna listen to what I'm feeling, and I'm gonna strive to listen to what you're feeling, and we're gonna try to avoid this defensiveness, because what happens is when I start thinking and I'm no longer able to empathize or just feel, then I'm gonna likely bring up some defensiveness.
Yeah,
because what I'm hearing is you think I'm an idiot, or you think I'm
careless, unloving.
Yes.
Yeah.
When in reality, no, that wasn't.
The thing I was doing is because I love you. Like,
yeah,
that's
it can be.
That's
yes.
very often a sticking point in, you know, marriage relationships, where it's like the perception of what happened was abandonment or, you know, the opposite of love.
Yeah. Something
where the
different
person,
than love.
Right. Where the person. Here's a classic example. The man works too late, works too much, isn't home. That's perceived as not love, where the man may have grown up with those intrinsic feelings of like, when I do this, this is the best way I show you love, right? It's that provision. It's the, I sacrifice for you.
Sure.
Right? That's a very classic example, I think,
Yeah.
That's a trope, if you will.
Yeah. It's an implied form of love.
Right. But that's where so that communication breakdown happens, where you don't love me, you're never home, and no, you don't understand. This is how I love you or whatever. And, but yeah, being able to understand that both of those, this is something that when I want to talk about this, that there was one thought that just kept coming to my mind, which is feelings are valid.
Oh, sure.
But that doesn't mean they are the truth.
Sure.
And so I think that...
Feelings are real, but they're not always accurate.
Right.
Yes.
And they don't represent... They're a color on the map. They don't necessarily represent the map, the territory, right? Like,
no, I hear you, yeah.
And I think understanding that there is value in your emotions, but that they are not the truth. Like, I feel like you don't love me doesn't mean you don't love me, right? That feeling is valid and important and means something and should be worked through, but it doesn't imply the truth that I think the feeling it is saying, right?
Like, sure.
That you actually don't, you know? Unless, of course, you don't. Then that's a whole
and it's interesting that you bring up the color with emotions, because we can identify, there is color therapy to a certain degree to, you know, identify, you know, emotions based on a color. You know, we think of blue and, you know, for sadness and
green room for peace.
There, you know, yeah, yeah, there's, but
red for anger.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
So all those come into play. But yes, you bring up a great point in that context of relationship. Well, how gender or how our social, our family system develops what love looks like.
Right.
Based on our gender roles at times. This is what the man does. This is what the woman does. Well, I grew up with a completely different parental system than, you know, Chris did, or, you know, you from Megan. So, of course, those roles are going to be different. What love looks like, what having a need met looks like, is going to be completely different.
Right. And even among the same family, a brother and a sister, right? Like, they can exhibit love in drastically different ways because, like you said, the way the gender roles played out in their family.
Sure.
The woman was expected to do this and the man was expected to do this. And then that's what they... Yeah, so then a brother and sister might look completely opposite.
Sure.
Even though... And yeah, I think it's very...
And I think gender comes into that to a certain degree. But from my perspective, I'd also say, yes, they grew up in the same family system. But when another sibling came along, the entire structure completely changes. Yeah. So even though, you know, there was a firstborn child, their experience in that system was completely different or changed dramatically when the second child came along. The second child never had that first experience.
Yeah.
So, you know, the entire structure changed. They didn't grow up in the same family, although they did.
Right.
You follow me? Yeah. In that same, they didn't have the same experience, even though they grew up in the same family.
Yeah. If you don't mind, can I steal your diagram?
Of course. Yeah. It? Yeah.
Okay. So...
I actually, let me make a part all after right. You steal the diagram. Explain the diagram.
You sure?
I'm good with that. I'm good with that.
So he sent over this Venn diagram.
Sure.
And if you're not familiar with the word Venn diagram, Venn diagrams are, they're always fun. I enjoy them.
Yeah.
It's basically overlapping
circles. Justin gets excited about overlapping circles.
I like Venn diagrams. They just do their job very well, right?
Sure.
They're a way of illustrating a thing, right? So a Venn diagram, if you're not aware of what it is essentially overlapping circles.
Yep.
Right? Where a circle on the left is red, circle on the right is blue, and they overlap a sliver in the middle, right?
Sure.
I'm holding my hands up as if two circles.
You're doing a great job here. I can
visual,
see exactly.
Right, Mark. The rest of you have to imagine it. But that middle sliver is purple.
Sure.
Right? And
because
so that's,
they overlap.
Yeah, that's the overlaps. And then maybe you add a third color circle and move it up from the bottom, and now it's dark brown or whatever, that middle thing.
Sure.
And so you might have a purple chunk, you might have a brown chunk, but the colors are to represent ideology. So in this case, the one we're looking at, on the left is a blue circle that says rational mind.
Sure.
Right? Mm-hmm. And on the right is a green circle that says emotional mind. And when you know, you were talking about this a little bit. It made me think of that attachment theory thing with that we talked about in the user-friendly episode.
Sure.
So, hey, if you haven't listened to the user-friendly episode, you need to. It's good. But the idea where the way I felt when in those intrinsic memories, whether I was abandoned and I, you know, I was left alone and, and maybe that triggers this irrational mind where I'm on my own. I have to figure things out. I have to think things through. I can't depend where, or maybe it's the other way where they doted on me and, you know, I got my every need met. All I had to do was whine a little bit, right?
Sure.
I don't know. You would understand those, how they attach better, but that I see how those things can affect how we end up being as an adult, like how those patterns play into where maybe I'm more emotional, you know, whatever, or I may be more rational, or like you said, the gender roles could play a part, or the position in your family, first, second, third child, whatever.
Sure.
The point is, there's two sides to this Venn diagram, but right in the middle, I really like it. It has where the intersection is the purple, if you will, would be wise mind.
The overlap is wise mind, yes.
Because it's very important to be able to have a rational mind and the emotional mind, be able to combine them.
Sure.
To have, you know, what they describe as wise mind, but the few things that they have in here is intuitive thinking, arrangement and balance between rational and emotional mind, living mindfully. It's like, I think of it as this idea of seeing those waves come against us and thinking about them and determining what I do with them.
Yeah.
Right? It's that proactive approach. It's the rational side to say, what is this emotion mean to me today? In some cases it means, oh yeah, that's the one I ignore in this situation.
Sure.
Because it's a trigger and it's not reliable. Oh, this one I've learned and to then do this.
Sure.
Whatever that this is, right? Anyway, I really like it. And just so we're clear, rational mind is like someone who approaches knowledge intellectually, thinks logically, uses past experience, uses facts and research as well as planning. They're focused. The emotional mind, reason and logical thinking is difficult, uses only emotions to make decisions. They're reactive, tells us how we are really doing, uses core psychological needs. They mostly put negative things in the emotional mind, didn't they?
Well, the part that I like about this is tells us how we are really doing.
Oh, yeah.
In other words, we need our emotions to basically help us, kind of like a thermometer. It gives us a reading of where we are emotionally. And I think we can break these down. But for me, you know, if I'm explaining rational mind, I'm going to tend to think, and I don't mean to be stereotypical, but rational mind, I'm going to think of IT guy. Just the facts. Just tell me what I need to know. What does when you do this happens? That's what I need to know. I don't need to know that you didn't get your report in. I don't need to know all the other issues that were a result of this one thing not working. I just need to know how it doesn't, you know, when it doesn't work and what it does when it does that. You follow me?
Yep.
And on this other end of the extreme, we might refer to kind of the drama queen, if you will. I probably shouldn't have done that with a tone, but you get that idea that, you know, there's these strong emotions that this person is routinely feeling. And there is this sense of it's always this way. And you fall, and that there again, that those kind of words are what elicit the reactivity on someone else's part, because while they're in emotion mind saying you never do this for me, you never come through, you know, the rational mind is automatically thinking, no, that's not true. I did this. So we can already see how the communication breaks down.
Yeah.
So being able to identify that and say, okay, no, in this circumstance, not always, not never, but in this moment, I felt. And then that allows the rational mind to be able to say, okay, that's what you felt. And we're not going to try and fix it. We're going to allow it.
A rational mind says your feeling is invalid.
basically
the
off
the wise mind, that intersection in the middle says, oh, that's what you thought? Now I can...
Yes. Right. Now I have intuition.
Right. Now I can use my rational mind to process that.
Yes. And it's okay that you felt that way.
I just wanted to clarify, because you said a rational mind will say, oh, you felt that. If we're using this Venn diagram, if you're only on that rational side, you would look at it and go, nope, invalid input. I need something different.
Right.
That's not going to work. What else you got? You know.
And that's the thing. And here again, I'm not being judgmental, but I think in like our, armed services and, you know, just community servants like policemen, firemen, so often, you know, it is a rational mind thinking that is going to save lives to a certain degree.
Sure, yeah.
Because if I'm not thinking, someone may get hurt.
Yeah.
And yet at the same time, we can't completely live 24 hours a day avoiding all emotion.
Hmm.
Because, ignoring all emotion. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because then we're not a healthy individual. Right. And I realize that's a difficult process for some people, because they're rewarded, you know, from their job, from their circumstances by... You know,
right. You're reinforced in one direction or another. So in the case of a police officer, you're reinforced in the rational mind, and it might become difficult to break out of that mold when you're at home with a wife who's been home all alone with her kids for a week because you've been on night shifts or whatever.
Yes.
And it's difficult to disengage from that training. Yep. We're almost out of time, I think, but I was thinking about emotional mind and rational mind. I think our natural tendency, especially if you grew up in like a Judeo-Christian type of family, is to go, oh yeah, the rational mind, that's the husband, and emotional mind, that's the wife or whatever. But I think that is not accurate. It's not always true. Like, I know, like, one of my struggles, like I said, I've had to work through, is I've had an emotional mind, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I like to think that I was not a pansy or whatever. I don't think it means that, right? And
right. No, I
think about, too, like, you know, going back to our gender episode, we talked about toxic masculinity.
Yep.
A lot of that comes from emotional mind in a man. This anger, this I need to control you, this whatever, are coming from an emotional, I won't be, you know, whatever, so I'm going to do, right? Like, but we don't think of that, we don't naturally think of them as being an emotional person.
Sure.
But we really should. That's what's happening there.
That's what's underlying.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what I've learned, how I've learned to interact with people. Yes.
Right, and vice versa. Like, we think of a woman, that, you know, mom, wife, whatever, being... emotional, and that's not always true. Sometimes they're overly rational, and they can be cutting and cruel. And some of the things I've heard, even in recovery, like, mom said this to me, and it just cut them so deep because it was this completely unemotional and very irrational. And like, women are very capable of having too much rational mind, you know.
Yeah,
I just thought that was an important kind of follow up. That, man, this can happen across the spectrum.
Yeah.
You know,
and it's interesting when I look at this diagram, for me, I guess the person that comes to mind is Jesus for me personally. You follow me? Because I believe in the shortest verse in the Bible is in John 11.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, if we look at that, that's a moment when I believe Jesus demonstrated that it's okay to have empathy.
Mm-hmm.
Because in that moment, up till then, he was talking, when Lazarus died, his disciples were basically, he was misunderstood by his disciples when he was saying, hey, Lazarus is sick. You follow me? And he's really dead, but it's not my time to go there.
Yeah.
And yet he knows all of that. He was misunderstood by his disciples, yet he continues in the process. But when he gets there, he sees Martha and Mary. And he knows that Lazarus is sick. He knows in about 15 minutes, he's going to raise Lazarus from the dead. He's got all this in his mind. And
the rational mind.
Yes. And yet, at that point, when he experiences their loss, their grieving, he's able to go with them into the emotion and have empathy for them, with them, and cry over their momentary loss.
And Jesus wept.
And Jesus wept. And I think for me, that's that demonstrates wholeness of a person, is the ability to know some things and yet still engage with people at an emotional level to the point of understanding when they're hurt, we can hurt with them. We can have empathy for them in that emotion. And to me, that's a wise mind that can basically say, okay, I can go with you into this emotion and we're going to be okay.
Yeah.
I don't have to say, no, cut that out. Stop it. This is what you need to do and we're going to fix it.
Yeah.
Because that just doesn't, at that point, I'm no longer accepting that person at that level. I have to go to that level and say, okay, this is where you're at. And then from there, we can choose a path that seems appropriate from that perspective.
Yeah. So you're saying Jesus is the perfect shade of purple in our red blue Venn diagram.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's the goal, is to get to that.
That's my model.
Color looks like, just look at Jesus and
I
love that.
At times in our sometimes in a session, I'll even say to people, it's like, when anger is, and you fill in the blank, you follow me? I'll use that because that helps me understand what their viewpoint of anger is. You follow me? Because anger's an emotion. But so often we grow up with these dynamics that say, well, anger is wrong. Anger is bad. Okay, no, anger is an emotion. Anger has purpose. And I think that's the interesting part for me, because when I look at, you know, scripture and other things, it's like, yeah, God was angry. Jesus was angry. And yet Ephesians tells us, you know, in your anger, do not sin. So we don't have to be victims, or we don't have to be controlled by anger, but yet we can recognize that when I'm feeling anger, there's likely something that needs to change.
Yeah.
And so I don't have to be aggressive and I don't have to be passive. I can learn to be assertive in the midst of that anger and say, okay, this is what needs to happen. From my perspective, I'm not telling you what you need to do, but in this situation, this is what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
And I think that's what Jesus was as a model for us. It's like, you can go that way, but as for me, I'm going this way.
Yeah.
And if you want to call me out, I'm happy to address those dynamics in your life. If you want to say I'm something, but yeah, at the same time, it was always about their relationship, their standing with God, and that misunderstanding that many people have.
Yeah, because to summarize, emotions are not sin.
Exactly.
But they could certainly send you in towards sin, right? Like if it's just like anything in our life, it can become an idol.
Yes.
And so fear can become an idol and be placed in front of God. And he says, get that out of the way.
Yes. You know? And I think that for me, that's where balancing the two is so important.
Yeah.
And it's not always a balancing, but yet being able to recognize that overlapping of the wise mind that says, okay, in this context, in this moment, what is really going on? And being able to stay there in such a way that models that for other people who might value emotion or rationality too highly.
Yeah, and be able to connect with both is so important.
Yes, yeah. The overlap.
Good. I think this was a good episode.
Well, I think this is what we've recorded.
Yeah.
So at that point, hopefully others enjoy it as well. But it's been a fast episode.
It's certainly been.
And like most,
right?
There's always more.
There's more. There's more to unpack.
Yeah.
Well, we can always do a next part two.
Part two. Yeah.
But
either way,
it's very, very much how we see it.
How we see it.
Hey, thank you for listening to our podcast. If you like How I See It, please do all the things that podcasts tell you to do. Subscribe, rate, review, follow us, and or talk nicely about us on social media. If you want to reach out, the email is us@howiseeit.click. Yep, I said dot click, as in dot C-L-I-C-K. Please tell your friends about this show, and we'll see you on the next one.